Morning Drive with Goodman and Hurdle, presented by Silter Har Mazda. A no-pressure buying experience in Broomfield at Silter Har Mazda. Live from the Sasquatch Casino and Wild Card Casino Sports Desk, here's Eric and Bruce.
All right, rolling into hour number two on a Wednesday, courtesy of Roller Auctions, rollerauctions.com. Roller Auction Twitter feed at Bruce Hurdle, at Eric Goodman. Next Tuesday, Buy and Build is having an auction featuring cabinet sets, sinks, fixtures, carpet, hardwood flooring, and much more. The auction is open for your perusal or involvement at rollerauction.com. Get notifications about upcoming auctions at rollerauction.com/MHS. Time now for The Lead.
The Lead is brought to you by Beyond Stem Cells. Grow young with us by going to beyondstemcellsdenver.com or call 1-833-720-STEM.
In what is a wonderful week for those of us locally here, with the Avs and the Nuggets basically playing one night after the other, it's the Nuggets' turn this evening, and the ante is upped. This is no longer the Portland Trailblazers, no longer the Memphis Grizzlies, no longer give guys nights off, no longer worry about load management. You are in the thick of things against a team in the Phoenix Suns that is relevant on your side of the equation and brings in a capable, we think, lineup to play the Nuggets tonight. Now, this is the same Phoenix Suns that, curiously, Sean, lost to a Victor Wembanyama-less San Antonio Spurs. Yeah, you try that one. I was worried about getting through it once.
And that was with Kevin Durant, Bradley Beal, and Devin Booker all starting, which doesn't happen very often.
Right.
And they still lost. Yikes.
Where are the Suns right now in terms of respectability and you better pay attention to them?
They have Kevin Durant.
Mm-hmm.
And they have Devin Booker. So you better pay attention to them. You know, and I look at it, you know that they can get free throws if they stop being a jump shooting team. Durant had only two free throw attempts in that loss to the Spurs, in part because the Suns decided to just jump shoot all night. And they did not, even though they did it well, hitting 50.8%, they ended up in a game where they only got to the line 14 times and only hit 8 of those. So they were outshot 16-19 by the Spurs to 8-14. The free throws made the difference. The more aggressive team, the Spurs, ended up beating the Phoenix Suns, who actually ended up shooting the ball substantially better. There's a lesson in there for the Nuggets, because Yusuf Nurkic, the former Nugget, the man who was the starter and then he was usurped by Jokic and never to be seen again in Denver, is game to play against Nikola Jokic every single time. And he is not afraid to be physical, and I think Yusuf Nurkic is actually a pretty darn good NBA player. But Jokic gets him in foul trouble with regularity. Nurkic gets a little frustrated during games.
Yep.
An aggressive Nuggets team, which, look, I would say almost certainly, will not have Jamal Murray tonight. Michael Malone has made it clear that Jamal Murray is going to take a little bit longer.
It sounds like we're not going to have him for a minute or two.
It does. Yep. And so I think it's incumbent on Jokic in the early going to do something that the Nuggets don't do very often, and then start working their way to the foul line. Michael Porter Jr., who's been putting the ball on the floor and driving more often than we've ever seen him do it. Aaron Gordon, same thing. Take the ball to the rack. Get the Suns in foul trouble. Get to the line, because what you've seen from the Suns is, given, I think, the injury history for these guys, is that they will fall into being, you talked about the Avalanche and the way they lost last night. The Suns, if you smack them in the mouth, turn into a jump shooting team. They don't want any part of a physical game. They don't.
Softness about the Suns.
There is absolutely a softness, with the notable exception of, you know, grabby McElbows in Grayson Allen over there, who will do whatever he can to muck up a game.
And Devin Booker will get after you a little bit.
A little bit.
He'll get after you a little bit, but
he'll get his shots, obviously.
That's right. That's right.
But, you know, Murray is not usually charged on to stop Booker anyway. So, it in many ways, you know, you'll see KCP on Booker. In Allen's case, you know, it will have to be probably Reggie Jackson who's minding the store. On the bright side, I think Reggie's one of those guys that isn't really going to be bothered by Grayson Allen's Can you call it a play style? Is it a play style?
Baiting other guys?
Yeah, I mean, if you just, if it, mean, it's the equivalent of like a slap fight for every minute you're on the, is that a basketball playing style? I'm not sure.
I always love players that are, that fill in the blank spot of guy you'd most like to take out behind the woodshed.
Used to be Bill Hanzlick's role all those years ago with the Denver Nuggets.
There you go. I defer to Bill on that one to some degree. All right, so here's my net. I'm wondering about this because Michael Malone said something that I thought made some really interesting sense after the win against the Grizzlies. Now, that was a low-impact, low-stress game.
Yeah, never trailed.
So you never worry about things. This game tonight has the potential to be interesting. Potentially, it could be interesting, especially with Jamal Murray out of the lineup. How much does it change how Michael Malone uses personnel now? You got to start Reggie Jackson here, right? Christian Brown. It will change the way that you use your bench. And he made some very interesting comments about Nikola Jokic the other night, saying, I think Nikola loves these kinds of games where he has to elevate guys around him.
I think it engages him.
That normally aren't guys that you have to count on to win games. That's a really interesting thing. I guess we shouldn't be surprised that that would be a motivating factor for a guy like Nikola Jokic.
No, I suppose not. And I think in Jokic, look, Jokic is your happy warrior, right?
Mm-hmm.
And anybody who spends a little time with Jokic understands that that public persona is his private persona. He's a pleasant goofball.
Totally real.
But make no mistake, and ask anybody who's played against him, that dude wants to bury you on the basketball
court. He's a killer.
He wants to embarrass you. He wants to bury you. And this Phoenix Suns team is the one that ended their playoff run in embarrassing fashion, in which Jokic got so frustrated, got himself thrown out. He hasn't forgotten that. And yes, I think that he does become engaged when working with a Reggie Jackson or a Christian Brown or a Peyton Watson and getting to the point where he sets them up and helps them grow. It's engaging to him, but I also think the beauty of it is guys like Watson, guys like Brown understand you have, and I've said this before on my show with Sandy, and I've said this before on the show that you host on Colorado Sports Night.
Mm-hmm.
This is, as he's about to win his third MVP, it could have easily been on his way to the fourth, in which now you're talking about the pantheon of players.
Yeah, you are.
This is the Nikola Jokic era of the NBA, and it's how we're going to look at it. No matter how many championships the Nuggets win, because the game will be played differently after Nikola Jokic retires than it was before he came onto the scene. There is no doubt of that. All you have to do is go look at the March Madness tournament.
Sure.
Look at the way players are playing all over the country, all over the world. Look
his
at the
name is being
impact.
Invoked in description of those players at the in the college tournament right now.
This is now how big men are expected to play. And as a result, you see on the Nuggets young players to understand, okay, well, it's the Nikola Jokic era of the NBA. Mm-hmm. This is Nikola Jokic's team. We go where he goes. You need to get on the same page as he does, and you'll be fine. You're playing with Joe Montana. You're playing with Wayne Gretzky. We're talking about this level of person.
A generational player.
Just where he says to go, go. Mm-hmm. What he says to do, do. Trust it. You're in the right spot. And I think the growth for Watson that has been explosive, even though he's not often playing with Jokic, still springs from it.
Well, he's doing commercials with him.
Yeah, exactly.
He's got a rapport.
Exactly.
I mean, and people laugh. If they might laugh when they hear about, those are the types of things, that kind of chemistry, it's real.
Jokic was asked a couple weeks ago who he would trust to take care of his horses. And it was the most introspective he's been in years.
Yes.
He's literally sat silently for about 60
he
seconds.
He had to think about it.
And you could almost see him like on his fingers. Well, okay, well, this is Jamal Murray and then KCP. And then I guess, he's like, well, Aaron Gordon. To the point where Aaron Gordon's response on social media was just an emoji with a tear.
Yeah, yeah.
After hearing about it. He was like that touched by it. So, yes, I think that in many ways, losing Murray for this game is a disadvantage, but also an opportunity because the Nuggets are looking for the big picture. And the big picture requires a healthy Jamal Murray and a fresh Jamal Murray, as much as you can get him. But it also means that the younger players like Christian Brown and Peyton Watson and maybe Julian Strother or Colin Gillespie, who's been playing as well, these guys need the time on the floor to get the bench where it needs to go. So it is a loss, but it's an investment. And it can be a very cheap one if the Nuggets get the win.
I will say this, too. We are, and I am certainly in this group, we're a little, maybe tend to be dismissive of the Suns when we probably shouldn't be.
Oh, you shouldn't.
Shouldn't be, because this is a team that won two games last year against them in the playoffs.
NBA is still a top-end talent sport.
It took the Nuggets winning a game in Phoenix that could have just as easily gone the other way to get it back to 3-2. Mm-hmm. They end up winning it in six. They add Nurkic. Now all of a sudden you've got a big body. Yes, he's a guy that historically has gotten frustrated, and Nikola Jokic has owned that rivalry.
But he's an upgrade from DeAndre Ayton.
He sure as hell is. He is. And he is a capable guy in terms of dealing with Jokic's presence, his size, and things of that nature. And you still have a trio that any one of them could go off on you on in any night.
Yes.
So it's easy to look at the Timberwolves, and I get it. That would still be at the front of the line because of the size, Anthony Edwards.
I think they're the Nuggets' biggest threat.
I do, too.
And with you bring up Anthony Edwards, and Anthony Edwards, one of the handful of players in the NBA for which the Denver Nuggets, the champs, maybe the deepest team in the league, have no answer.
Right.
Period. Don't dance around it. They have no answer for Anthony Edwards. You have to make sure the rest of the Timberwolves don't beat you, and that's why they're the biggest threat to the Nuggets. But they're later this week.
Yes.
You got a Hall of Famer coming in tonight. Don't discount it.
I mean, the next three games to me are
their statement games.
Great statement for the Nuggets. When you've got the Suns coming in with who they bring to the table, Timberwolves, that's self-explanatory. And then maybe the sneakiest team of all, the Cleveland Cavaliers, who've been nothing short of damn good this year.
If they were healthier this year,
they'd
be much more dangerous.
No question about it. All right, we'll flip the script and get to the Avs again. 2-1 losers last night. Sean described it in hour one as an opportunity that got away, but sometimes those opportunities provide growth. We'll explain here as we continue in a moment.
Morning Drive with Goodman and Hurdle, presented by Silterhar Mazda. A no-pressure buying experience in Broomfield at Silterhar Mazda. Find them at sthmazda.com. Live from the Sasquatch Casino and Wildcard Casino Sports Desk, here's Eric and Bruce.
A little Electric Light Orchestra back from the break.
He's like, what, 30 years older than Alex?
Yes.
How do you pull that down?
I was going to say, if this is on your playlist, more power to you.
I try to play stuff that you guys would like, because if I play
stuff
I would like.
Easy, my friend.
Man, we're trying to set you up and make you look deep, and then you do that.
Sean Drotar with us. Of course, you can catch Sean in the afternoons with the great Sandy Clough, 4 to 6 right here on Mile High Sports. Electric Light Orchestra.
Sandy also would have approved, by the way.
Without question. Overrated or underrated, ELO?
I'll tell you why they are underrated, and maybe Alex can speak to this, because you want to get into music nerddom. ELO and Yes were your forerunners of modern EDM.
Ah.
It doesn't exist without those two particular prog rock bands.
I was a good Yes guy. I wasn't a great ELO guy. But you're right.
Jeff Lynne, though?
It's hard to deny his contribution.
But EDM doesn't exist in its present form without those two bands in particular.
Well said. Hey, every night's a good night at Nola Jane's. Spice up your next night out at Nola Jane in Lodo, like tonight, because it's game night. Hell, it's game night every night at Nola Jane's. Authentic Cajun cuisine, andouille sausage, gumbo, dirty rice, which is Eric's favorite. Gets it each and every time. Crawfish, etouffee, as well as six different po'boys like soft shell crab and shrimp. come in before or after a game or concert at Ball Arena, host a party or party on the rooftop deck, because those days are coming. It's going to be 70 before the week's out. 70.
Ah, March in Colorado.
Before the week is out. Yeah, no kidding, right?
It's baseball season, as it turns out.
Yep.
Someone informed me.
Tomorrow. Happy hour at Nola Jane, 11 a.m. to 5. That's a hell of a happy hours,
and
right?
You got more time for dinner tonight because the Nuggets start late.
Yeah, that's right. That's an, yeah, it's a late game.
And you can watch it if you have Comcast.
Yes.
So also cool. That wins is all around.
God, no kidding. We are winners in Denver. Make Nola Jane your new favorite spot to eat, drink, and party like it's Mardi Gras. Time now for the Buzz.
The Buzz is presented by High Country Performance 4x4 in Englewood, Colorado's premier one-stop shop for anything and everything 4x4s and trucks. High Country Performance 4x4, building cool since 1980. Go to hcp4x4.com.
Well, if you had gone to Nola Jane's after the game last night, it would have been for drowning your sorrows as an opportunity goes by the boards for the Avalanche. Oddly swept by there are some results in a season that you just look at and say, huh? Losing to Montreal twice seems oddly misplaced for a team like the Avalanche, who were trying for a 10th straight win. But let's spin this. Not that we ever want to be accused as spin doctors, but let's spin this, because teaching moments, if you believe in teaching moments, even for a team that is steeped in veteran professional presence and is 72 games into an 82-game season, you always look for coaching moments. What were the coaching moments last night in a 2-1 loss, in which a win would have put the Avs atop the Western Conference clear and free?
First and foremost, stop messing around on the power play looking for the perfect shot.
Stop playing with your food.
Right, right. Just go ahead and find a clean shot, take a clean shot, go follow up for the rebounds. In the Stanley Cup playoffs, the pretty highlight reel goals are not common. You know, when you talk about, it's not as if Tkachuk and Rantanen don't get all those, but if you're trying to envision an Avalanche goal, that little tic-tac-toe that Makar slides over to MacKinnon, that MacKinnon slides across the goal mouth to Rantanen, that's not the goals that get scored in Stanley Cup. The goals that get scored in Stanley Cup playoffs are the ones that you've seen that go from Makar to MacKinnon, who tries to slide it to Rantanen. Rantanen rips it. It bounces off the goaltender, and then someone like Nichushkin just knocks it in from about right, 6 inches away. Those are the kind of goals that get scored in the Stanley Cup playoffs. You got to get dirty. You got to get into the crease. You got to get it a little more physical and a little less finesse. And the Avalanche are capable of it. We know they are. But when they're really rolling, sometimes you fall in love with your skill. And we talked about that just a segment ago with the Phoenix Suns, who come in to play the Nuggets right tonight. They lost to the Spurs without Victor Wembanyama because they didn't want to play a physical game. They felt that their shooting would carry the day. It didn't, and they may have one of their worst losses of the year. For the Avalanche, kind of the same thing. When you have a really talented squad of shooters, you can fall into that trap. The Avs did last night.
10 games still to play. Plenty of opportunities. Plenty of opportunities. Although the Avs are not playing an easy schedule.
The hardest.
The rest of the way. This could be a good thing for them. It could be something or other that maybe challenges them a little bit. Maybe your focus is good on from night in and night out. Because really, at the end of the day, for a team like the Avs, how essential is home ice?
Well, in hockey, it's less so than I think any right of the playoffs of any of the four major sports, I suppose. But it's not as much the home ice as it is the fact that both Dallas and Winnipeg are pretty tough matchups. You'd like to have one of those wild card teams mm-hmm. in the first round rather than having to play Dallas or Winnipeg.
Yeah.
And you certainly don't want to slide to third where you have to have road. You don't have the home ice advantage against Dallas or Winnipeg. So it's valuable. It's not essential. But it's more about the division, I think, that for the Avs that you're concerned about, because that division is really, really good. There mm-hmm. is no division that has the top three teams within as close a margin any further than the one the Avs are in the Central. None of the other divisions have a three-team race. This is the only one that does. That means you got three dangerous teams. You don't want to have to go through that again. You want to get out of that gauntlet and start playing wild card teams.
Why is there such a thin margin for error in the playoffs in the NHL, where an eight oftentimes can and will beat a one? Why is it? You don't see it in other sports.
No.
You really just...
Well, you used to, but the NBA made sure they elongated
exactly.
The,
yeah, they've
the series to make sure that...
They've taken care of that.
Now, there's no more Dikembe Mutombo laying on the floor with the ball, right?
We can't have the Nuggets beating the Sonics, right? So why is it? Why is it that there is such a thin margin in the NHL? And a lot of times, we do see a 7 go beat a 2 or an 8 beat a 1 and do it in a best-of-7 series.
Right. Well, a lot of it, at least the sort of conventional wisdom, is it has to do with the hot goalie, which is a real thing.
Now they got one last night.
Right. The difference is a goalie can steal a game.
Mm-hmm.
And you can go back in Avalanche history and you can think of a lot of ways to do it. A goalie can steal a game for you if you have a truly great one. You think about it, Patrick Waugh is 60 saves in a Stanley Cup game once. I mean,
sure.
You're talking about those kind of where the goaltender just steals one. If the goaltender steals one game, now all of a sudden you just have to win 50. It's 50-50, right? So that's a lot of it. The other part of it is that because it's a game more of depth, unlike the NBA, again, where the top end talent rises, you have to roll all four lines. You, when you're talking about an Avalanche team, for example, you know, we're talking about a 60-minute game, right? The Avalanche, when you look at their team and their top players, Nathan MacKinnon and Mikko Rantanen are on the ice for slightly over a third. Rantanen averages 23 minutes and 10 seconds on ice. MacKinnon, 22:53. So your top guys are only on there a third of the game. It's a little bit in that regard like baseball, in so much as, great, you can have the best hitter in the game. He still only comes up one every nine guys.
Yep.
So the combination of the two, that the goalie can steal it, and you just can't have your best players on the ice more than a third of the time, means that all of a sudden your depth, which is pretty equalized in a salary cap league especially, ends up being in that mix. And at that point, it's just kind of a coin toss. So you see that kind of bubble up in the NHL a lot.
All right, when we continue, we're going to stay with the theme of hockey. And I am going to ask the question, do the DU Pioneers need a new travel agent? We'll explain on the other side.
Morning Drive with Goodman and Hurdle, presented by Silterhar Mazda. A no-pressure buying experience in Broomfield at Silterhar Mazda. Find them at sthmazda.com. Live from the Sasquatch Casino and Wild Card Casino Sports Desk, here's Eric and Bruce.
Actually, Eric will be back tomorrow. We look forward to seeing our old pal. Sean Drotar has helped us out for the last 3 days. Very appreciative. Don't forget Sean and Sandy taking the airwaves today from 4 to 6. On Afternoon Drive here on Mile High Sports. Don't forget Roller Auctions Twitter feed. You can catch us at Bruce Hurdle, at Eric Goodman. Next Tuesday, Buy and Build is having an auction featuring cabinet sets, sinks, fixtures, carpet, hardwood flooring, and much more. The auction open, even as we speak, at rollerauction.com. Get notifications about upcoming auctions at rollerauction.com/MHS. Time now for What's Trending.
What's Trending is brought to you by Nola Jane Restaurant and Bar. Let Nola Jane spice up your next trip to Lodo with the best Cajun cuisine in Denver.
DU Hockey is the number one seed in their regional as the NCAA Hockey Championships start on Thursday. They are the third overall top seed, but one of four number one seeds. Who do they play in their opening round? They play the University of Massachusetts, UMass, which is 25 miles north of Springfield, Massachusetts, which is where they are going to play, which means the DU Hockey is being sent 1,900 miles away to play a team that is the fourth seed, that is 25 miles away from the rink in which they will play. Not only that, DU Hockey, I am told, is the only program that is flying in the postseason to their opening rounds in the NCAA Hockey Championships. Am I missing something here?
No, it's
am I off
now,
base?
Now, to be clear about it, the four regions and the four locations, the closest to Colorado geographically is Missouri. Maryland Heights, Missouri is hosting one of those. You're talking about Sioux Falls, South Dakota, mm-hmm. for the other, Springfield, Mass., as you mentioned, in Providence, Rhode Island. So the Pioneers are flying anyway. Heavy is the head that wears the crown. The westernmost champion in the history of NCAA hockey, besides DU and CC, is North Dakota. Not exactly western.
Right.
So obviously you're going to fly.
But
how come they're not in South Dakota or Missouri?
Right.
And how come UMass isn't in South Dakota or Missouri? They're the fourth seed out of the four teams in that bracket. It's just, it's lazy. It's an unfair bracket. It doesn't make sense. I get that the DU is going to have to fly. I understand that. But you should be inconveniencing everybody. Boston College is the top seed in the country. They're in Providence, Rhode Island. I can live with that. BU is number two. They put them in South Dakota. So they're correctly moving Boston around.
Right.
But UMass doesn't have to move. How about you move UMass? And the funny thing is the four seed in South Dakota is Omaha.
Right.
Just switch them. Send Omaha all the way to Springfield with Denver.
And give me the mathematical equation about 1-4 being higher or lower than another. You know the difference between Omaha and UMass when you're talking about a 4 line against the third number 1 seed?
Right.
would be virtually nothing. Just figure it out.
Okay, take the other 4 seed, take Western Michigan.
Yeah.
Slide them over, whatever. But it's a really bad break for DU. On the bright side, DU is the better team.
Yes, they are.
They go win, and then you'd get the winner of Maine versus Cornell. They're good enough to win the whole thing. They really are. And the truth is, their side of the bracket is about as favorable as you can get. You know, you're looking at a semis, I guess, against Boston, against BU. That's the expectation. But yeah, it's a bad break. I mean, one has to fly almost 2,000 miles, and one is, as you were talking about it, we're talking about during the break, could get on bicycles
literally,
and get there.
Literally, put backpacks on their back and bicycle.
You can get those little scooters.
Yes.
I mean, you'd have to
take a Vespa.
You might have to change one out, I guess, when recharge it. But I mean, you'd only have to switch one.
Put two guys on a Vespa. We'll see you in about 25 minutes.
Just get those little helmets on and just
off you go.
You can
right?
just stop by people. Ciao.
You know, I'll meet you at the rink and we'll play a little hockey. Now you bring up an interesting point, and I will back off a little bit because you're right. Competitively, they appear to be on a better side of the bracket.
Yes.
I will say that. Okay, so that's fine. Maybe that helps them out. By all accounts, and I am not a college hockey guy, I pay enough attention to DU, Colorado College to some degree, but I do pay attention to DU. Boston College is to me as it's described to me, a prohibitive number one. They're loaded apparently with pro prospects, this, that, and the other thing. That's fine. But here's DU now with an opportunity to win their second national title in 3 years, in a good position to do it. They are now in the 4-game run territory. Mm-hmm. They've won 5 straight, but now they add 4 more games, and they win a national championship and would become the first team in NCAA history to win 10 national titles. And, you know, I don't care if there's only 65 or 66 teams that compete for a national championship in college hockey.
Nobody else has 10. Nobody's got 10. Michigan and Denver are tied at 9.
That isn't.
Michigan is in this tournament, but
yes,
not expected to
be there. But what a remarkable thing to be able to say. And the history that really started back in the 50s, they won, I believe, their first national championship in 1958, and have been a player on the national stage pretty much in every decade since. They are always a factor. What a great program. It's just a moment to stop and kind of tip your hat. Now David Carl looking for his second national championship. But that's a pretty remarkable program, and they've had great success.
They have, and that run is kind of interesting because the history of this tournament starts in 1948, and Michigan won the first mm-hmm. one. The first 10 championships, the first 10 tournaments were held at the Broadmoor Ice Palace down in Colorado Springs.
Wow.
CC won their two national championships during that time back in 1950 and 1957. Then it moved along, and the very first year after it left the Broadmoor, DU wins their first out in Minnesota, and then nine more wow. after that. But it's birth, and that's another part of it. The birth of this tournament, the first decade, was in Colorado, was held in Colorado
Isn't
Springs.
That something?
And no venues held it more than the Broadmoor. It's held at 11 in total. And, of course, it's been held in Denver as late as 2008 when it was held at the then Pepsi Center.
Well, it's about time for Denver to get another one. And to be in the rotation now.
It's been since 2022. Come on, guys.
Yeah, because they have had regionals up in Loveland, and so they have played postseason hockey in this tournament in the state of Colorado. But anyway,
The championships is 2008, but the DU Pioneers won it 2022, 2017. And keep in mind that with you look at not only the history of that program but the coaches that have come through it. And you really have to give a tremendous amount of respect to David Carl, who has stepped in and effortlessly taken this program and elevated it yet again, which is just stunning. You know, this is his sixth year already, and he's on pace to win another potential title. And David Carl is not an old man. David Carl is in his 30s.
He's done a remarkable job. Monty, for God's sakes, is the coach for the Boston Bruins now.
Right. David Carl is 34 years old.
Yeah, think
in his
about
sixth
that.
Season and already has a title. Yikes. He's won 116 career games. He's 34.
It's remarkable. Well, best of luck to them. In fact, they play UMass tomorrow.
That's right.
Noon Mountain Time. And I believe that is on the ESPN family of networks.
It'll be ESPN2.
So there we go.
Yep.
So we'll be able to watch watch a little hockey at noon. Great stuff. All right, what do we have for the final word?
We'll talk about the NFL running it back this year with more Christmas Day football, and John Calipari is officially returning to Kentucky. But was it the right move? That's next on Morning Drive on Mile High Sports.
Morning Drive with Goodman and Hurdle, presented by Silterhar Mazda, a no-pressure buying experience in Broomfield at Silterhar Mazda. Find them at sthmazda.com. Live from the Sasquatch Casino and Wild Card Casino Sports Desk, here's Eric and Bruce.
All right, Alex, thank you very much for everything that you and Gordon have done today. Much appreciated. Remaining moments here on a Wednesday edition. Sean Drotar will retire for the afternoon drive coming your way at 4 o'clock with the great Sandy Clough. A lot of fun to work with him each and every day.
Yeah, you got to bring your A game.
You're talking about a guy with encyclopedic knowledge.
Tell me about it.
It is nothing short of remarkable. What an absolute gem, dare I say treasure, that we have here in the city of Denver. All right, finally, let's get to the final word.
The final word. Is presented by the McKenzie Law Firm. Don't wait before it's too late. Protect your family by setting up a will, living will, or estate plan with Dan McKenzie at themckenziefirm.com. Just in case you missed it, is presented by Argonaut Wine and Liquor. You need to see why Westward named it the best liquor store in Denver 5 years running, or order online at argonautliquor.com.
Alrighty, guys, just in case you missed it, The NFL is planning to play two games this year on Christmas Day, which falls on a Wednesday. So a Wednesday Christmas Day doubleheader will be happening. Some have taken issue with this as they have claimed it violates player safety, playing on that short of a week. Do you like the idea from Roger Goodell to play two games on Christmas Day, a Wednesday?
It was inevitable, just the way that they're going. I mean, I see the value in playing on Wednesdays. Okay, fine. It's going to be shoved down our throat. But you know what? When was the last time you missed a game on Christmas? I don't care what day it was. You're going to watch it anyway. It's the NFL, for God's sakes. And I love it how Roger Goodell was throwing out injury stats about the Sunday to Thursday and saying, well, it's not going to be really any much, because he knew the first thing was going to be safety or the lack of players' safety. That argument was going to come first and foremost. So he's throwing out the, well, wait, we've actually found that the Sunday to Thursday statistics for injuries are really very, not changed.
How have
the
we
Sunday
found
to Sunday?
The Saturday to Sunday to
Not sure
Wednesday,
about that
though,
one, right?
Have we?
Yeah, how are
yeah,
we going to do that?
You make
one?
Sure that they're not spending a lot of time. The funny thing is there's a fix for this, and it's extending the season by one game and having two bye weeks.
You're right.
In which you can start playing a whole bunch of things, but the NFL and the NFLPA aren't there yet. Things like this aren't going to help, though.
No.
I don't think players are too enthused about it. I know the NBA's not real enthused about it.
No,
they've owned Christmas
they
for
be,
a while.
Right? Yeah.
But the NFL eventually is like a black hole of sports. It will consume everything.
Everything. And you're absolutely right. NFL rules.
All right, just in case you missed it, despite another early exit from the NCAA tournament, Kentucky men's basketball coach John Calipari will return for his 16th season in 24-25. Calipari's future seemed cloudy following the Wildcats' first-round loss to Oakland.
Did it?
That number 14 seed. I mean, to some it did.
It did it, but really?
Yeah, really?
Really?
I mean, it was the latest upset on the program's resume. Haven't got out of the second round since before COVID. He would have been owed $33 million. That would have been the buyout if the school elected to fire him. What do you think about the decision to stick with Coach Cal?
I'm going to ask Sean to enlighten us all on Coach Cal's winning percentage at the University of Kentucky. So just hold on for a minute here. Winning percentage for John Calipari at Kentucky.
Well, remember, he started at UMass where he only won 73% of his games. Then he went to Memphis where he then won 76% of his game. Now at Kentucky, he wins 77% of his game. His winning record, his record is 410 and 122.
Ah.
And in conference, it's 753. He's won the conference, won the SEC. Let me count here. I got to get my fingers and toes. One, two, three, four, five, six times in those 16 years. He's got a championship. They've gone to the Final Four. They've gone to the Elite Eight three other times and been in the tournament all but 1 year, in which 2 years, pardon me, and then they went to the NIT back in 2012, 2013, then missed everything in 2020, 2021, but that was after COVID. Things were out of whack. I get it. Two comparatively early losses.
I do get that.
But you know how long John Calipari would have been out of work? You would have given him a $33 million paycheck to leave and be hired in about 35 minutes.
Seconds. Right?
You'd be fools to let him go.
Anybody that got wind of that would take him
go
in.
Go back.
A
go
heartbeat.
Imagine if Jamal Murray.
Please.
Just go back and look at the team. We don't have time to do it. Go back and look at the team Jamal Murray was on, where he was one and done. Go look what had happened if those guys had stayed the seniors. They might not have lost.
Yeah.
And this is what Calipari's dealt with because he gets freshmen, then they move on.
And by the way, think about the old guard, and Calipari's part of the old guard now. He's one of the few guys that are actually stuck around. He and Bill Self are kind of the old guard. Kelvin Sampson, who's kind of been reinvented, you know, after he left Oklahoma and then Indiana and then coming back to Houston now. But look at the guys that are no longer here. You know, the Jay Wrights and the Mike Krzyzewskis and Roy Williams is gone and, all, you know, Nick Saban, Boeheim, yeah. All of these guys are gone. They're set up for NIL. They were probably operating in that kind of continuum anyway. Same thing at Kansas. They were already operating in an NIL-like way. I'm not alleging anything necessarily, but they were operating in that kind of way. Don't worry about Kentucky. Don't worry about Kansas. Those places will continue to function.
The complaint is that he hasn't been using the transfer portal. And, well, okay. Coming into next year's class, three of ESPN's top 25.
Why are we even having this?
You'd get the transfer portal if he left.
There you go. The final word, courtesy of Argonaut Wine and Liquor. Just in case you missed it, Argonaut Wine and Liquor. Check them out at argonautliquor.com. John, thank you so much for taking extra time this week to help us out this morning.
Tons of fun.
Really appreciated it. It always is nice to have a little change up. Eric will be back tomorrow, which will be a change up in its own right.
And he'll be tan.
He will be, and he will parade it right in front of us, and will dangle that as something or other that he got to do and that we didn't. Gordon, Alex, thank you for everything. As always, we'll see you tomorrow, everybody. Have a great day.